AM 1160 The Quest presents Honest to God, What's on Your Mind? A show for young adults by young adults.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, super pumped to be here. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. This is Honest to God, a production of The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio. We had a great show, and I'm going to do the intros right this time.
Yeah, you're going to do the intro right. We had a little bit of a false start, but we've all had them. That's okay.
No, it's going to be great. We have the world-renowned Father Daniel Brandenburg here. Very excited. We got Michael, never been here before. Good to see you, Michael. And we've got Hannah, who's a pro. She's been here before. She knows what she's doing. It's going to be great. As always, we got producer Julian.
Always happy to be here.
Tickling keys.
Yeah, pushing buttons.
We got me. I'm not that big of a deal. And then we got show notes Benny, who may or may not be over in the corner.
Yeah.
Hey, we kind of rearranged the studio. This is the second one we've done.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It worked out so well. Last time we got Honest to God over my shoulder. We got Honest to God over your shoulder, making sure, and Honest to God over Father's shoulder,
that's just cool.
Make sure that you know that you're listening to the right show. And if you have not yet subscribed, make sure that you go on to the YouTube on Honest Number 2 God and subscribe to our channel. And if you're driving right now and listening on the radio, stop your car, pull over
right
and subscribe
median.
Immediately and like every single one of our videos. It will help us out a lot.
Yeah, make another YouTube account. Do the same thing with that one. Yeah.
I don't know what you're talking about there.
No, but we're really excited today. The theme of this episode is going to be voting. We're going to be talking about everything to do with the upcoming elections and getting into a lot of questions. We have some viewer-submitted questions. We've got EWTN questions. We've got USCCB questions about voting and sort of how our faith plays into all of that. But before we do anything, Father, would you mind leading us in prayer?
I'd be happy to. Let's begin in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Lord Jesus, you are the way, the truth, and the life. And when things get messy and not so clear and we're not sure how to proceed, we turn to you because you are the way, the truth, and the life. Guide us during this time of elections. Guide our politicians, our elected officials, guide our citizens so that they seek the common good, seek what is true and good and beautiful, and set aside all the partisan antics that sometimes distract us and pull us down into the wrong places. Lord, give us your focus and your clarity. We ask that your mother as well be with us and guide us through this political season and help us to seek that which is true and good and beautiful. We pray together. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen.
Thank you, Father. Because Father's a priest, I'm not going to give his prayer.
That's right. By our rules, we are not allowed to ask you to rate prayers.
I'm terrified. Yeah, I'm not gonna do that.
He wouldn't even rate Cardinal when you interviewed the Cardinal, who was a Cardinal Burke.
I didn't rate his prayer either. I thought that was probably a bad idea.
Yeah, you interviewed him live on air, and I'm like, okay, is he going to rate him? No.
No, no way. That was fun. That was a really great episode.
Yeah.
And then we got to hang out with Bishop Strickland not too long ago.
Not too long ago. Yeah, I think there's a picture floating around out there that stirred up a little bit of controversy.
We've got some opinions on that for sure.
Yep.
All right, guys, we're not talking about any of that today. We're going to get into voting. We've got this election right around the corner. This is going to be on air early October, which is what it is right now, because every episode of Honest to God is obviously live. And we just happen to wear the same clothes for multiple weeks in a row.
They tell us we can't change. We can't leave.
Can't leave. No idea what's going on.
Sometimes they let us shower. I think last time they let us shower.
Yeah. So if major events have happened that I'm not mentioning on here, it's because I've not left the studio for the past few weeks. Yeah. So anyway, it's going to be a really good show. And I want to spend a lot of time just kind of question and answering. Right. I feel bad in advance because I'm very excited about what Hannah and Michael have to say, but I really want to dig in to Father's answer to some of these questions because I hear them a lot. I work with a lot of young people. I talk at a lot of colleges and young 20, 30 somethings. And so I do hear a lot of these questions, and I want to hear the correct answers, because you can Google what do Catholics say about this and get some pretty wild stuff.
You certainly can.
Yeah.
But I'm actually very interested to hear also what Hannah and Michael have to say, because I used to do a lot of youth work, but I'm not doing as much youth work. I'm working more with adults now.
Right.
So hearing the perspective of young people, how they're seeing the world and the questions that they have, I think it's fascinating.
Well, can we do the format then where we start by kicking it over to them and then you kind of come in afterwards?
That'd be great.
I do want to rein one thing in. Do we want to give one fun fact?
We got to do a fun fact. Yeah, I was about to tee us up. I promise. I hadn't forgotten about
fun facts. All right.
Yeah.
There's been times that I've had to remind you. So it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, the Josh Harris episode, I think we forgot.
But yeah.
It is, well, what it is.
That was an important one also. So is this. It was a different style.
Yeah. So generally, I don't know if you were prepped by our corporate overlords in the green room, but we tend to start with some fun facts. Mm-hmm. You only owe us one. I think they should do three, right?
Two apiece?
Dose. All right, cool. So, Father, can you give us a couple of fun facts about you?
Well, I don't know how fun they are. They're sobering facts.
Sure. So we should change it to sobering facts to start the show. I like that a lot.
So I'm going to be a little different. Two sobering facts. I almost died of a heart attack when I was 39 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
I was pretty much the same weight and height as I am now. I had just run a half marathon 2 months before, in great shape. But hereditarily, I've got some genes from my dad's side that don't tend to have a very good heart. So I had a heart attack with 100% blockage in my right coronary artery. Doctors don't know why I didn't die.
Right.
Because part of my heart was stopped for 2.5 hours. So that's the first sobering fact.
That is a sobering fact. Praise God you're here, Father.
Thanks be to God. For some reason, I'm still here. And the second sobering fact is a year and a half after that, I was diagnosed with cancer.
Okay.
Multiple myeloma, and almost died three times in the process of going through the bone marrow transplant and all the complications that came from that. So for some reason, I'm still here. The Lord has me here on earth. So I hope this is not too heavy of a fact.
No,
it's something that's marked my life and my outlook on things. I was just sharing with another priest yesterday. I said, you know, I feel like I'm like one of those old, like 85, 90 year old priests who know that death's just around the corner.
Right.
And they just preach it like it is because they said, I'm not going to hell because I didn't tell you the truth.
That's a beautiful grace. Sure.
It is.
That's amazing. I did not know that about you. That's wild.
Yeah.
Well, good. We're really glad you're here. And if I'm doing my math right, that was only a couple of years ago, because you can't be more than about 43 right now.
I'm actually 48.
I guess. Okay. Wow.
Depending on, if you calculate from when I was, when my mother gave birth to me, I'm 48. But when you get a bone marrow transplant, they give you a new birthday. So I'm actually only 5.5 years old.
That's wild. Well, happy birthday.
I'm one of the few people that has two birthdays.
That's cool. All right. I dig it. That's great. Beat that, Josh. Or I'm sorry, not Josh. Beat that, Michael. Good luck. Good.
Well, actually, okay, so one thing about me that, like, not a lot of people notice off the bat, but I'm actually half blind. I'm completely blind in my left eye. So that's a little fun fact about me.
Okay.
Yeah, this one. I'll spare, like, all the details, but basically I was in a drive-by. I was shot in a drive-by 3 years ago.
No way. This is a true story.
Yeah. And
oh my goodness.
It was basically point blank, and it was just, like, two teenagers. They thought it was funny, you know. It was
right.
Whatever. I was on vacation with one of my friends and his family. They came by, just pulled up, popped me in the eye, and then, you know, it's been like that ever since. And
that is also not a fun fact. I'm so glad you were here, dude. That is wild.
Yeah, but that's just that's definitely been like a milestone in my faith as well.
Sure.
So that definitely, I don't know, it's a big part of my life. Definitely.
Right.
You know, something I have to live with every day. So yeah, another fun fact, I play guitar.
There's a juxtaposition there.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Well, Hannah, look,
Follow. See, my fun fact was going to be that I had a pumpkin spice donut today and I liked it. And it was awesome.
It is officially fall. So that's great. All right.
Nothing traumatic like that I remember happened to me.
I don't know if we've ever had such a... wide spectrum of fun facts.
No, I don't think so.
Everything from pumpkin spice to three near-death experiences all in the same
one. Same one, yeah.
Well, regardless, I'm very happy all of you are here. Pumpkin spice or life-altering, you know, whatever or not. And I want to dig into this, but I want to start by kind of opening it up to you guys, because I've got a bunch of questions laid out in front of me. I spent a lot of time talking into a microphone. The debate just happened. Right. A couple of days ago. Do you guys have a couple of months ago, because it is currently October. do you guys have any specific questions? Is there anything that you guys as sort of young adults want to really dig into and talk about on this episode?
For me, I have never voted in person. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if there's any tips or tricks or how to avoid lines, that kind of thing. Make sure your vote gets counted. I think there's so many things out there about like votes not getting counted or
right.
just not, yeah, just not counted correctly or something like that.
My secret is I'm registered to vote in Lumpkin County, Georgia, which means Lumpkin. There's not a lot of lines happening in Lumpkin County. I'm in and out in about 15 minutes every time.
I'm in the wide metropolitan Atlanta area, so
it's going to be a very different experience.
Yeah, it'll be pretty crowded for sure. But
you got anything in particular on your mind, Michael, before we sort of start in on this?
Yeah, I just really want to know, why even bother? You know, I'm young, never done it before, so why does it matter so much that I do?
And I want to kick that over to Father too, because do you know Anthony Esalen?
I know the name. I've never met him personally.
So he has a great book called Out of the Ashes. I talk about it a lot. It's one of my favorite books. It's phenomenal. Actually traded books with Father Bruce. And that was the one that I gave him. Yeah. Yep. And he has this line in there about how voting is like a grain of sand hitting a cliffside. Right. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't mean it to be sort of this, you know, so why even bother? But that's a big message that comes across. Now, even in Georgia, where we're a swing state now, unfortunately, right? It's the election for Georgia, our electoral votes are still going to be decided by tens of thousands of votes one way or the other. Do you have any thoughts on that? Or does anybody have any thoughts on why Michael should register to vote before October 7th and vote?
I do need to do that.
Well, I think it's very important when you take a step back at the bigger and look at the bigger picture in the compendium of Catholic Church's social teaching. In number 571, it talks about this actually in two different numbers. In 191 and 570, it talks about our responsibility as Catholics to vote. And that question about what's the point? You know, I'm one person.
Right.
There might be other people out there who are cheating or voting multiple times. I'm actually reading the novel The Jungle by Upton Sinclair right now.
100%.
And it's talking all about the political machine in Chicago and how dirty the politics were, people voting multiple times. And we've all heard those stories, and it does happen in politics. And so you wonder, what point is it? What point is there for me to vote?
Right.
But when we put it back in the church's perspective, voting is a part of participation. We are part of society. And that is under the principle of subsidiarity on the church's social teaching. So subsidiarity means allow decisions to happen at the place that's closest to the reality. And that means that we have to be engaged. And if we're not taking a concern for our neighbor, for our society, for the direction that the world is going, we're abdicating from our responsibility before God. And so in a certain sense, there's a sacred duty involved in our voting because we have an opportunity to engage in the process. Now, whether or not on a practical level it makes a difference, let's say, for example, it's a slam dunk election for a candidate and he wins by thousands and thousands of votes, but you vote for the other candidate because according to your conscience, you think, no, this is a better candidate. You still made a difference because you engaged in the process. And when we engage, we show that we love. And that's part of what we do in politics. Pope Francis said it very beautifully. He says that politics is actually a lofty vocation and a high form of charity. What does he mean by that? Charity in the sense that I care. I want to make a difference. I want to be part of the process. And the great temptation for all of us is to disengage and say, they're two terrible candidates. I don't want to vote for either one, or my vote's not going to make a difference. And I think those are all temptations of the evil one to get us into the area of indifference. I don't care. I can't make a difference. And to make us to feel helpless.
Sure. Yeah, I've noticed a strain in Catholics recently in the circles I run, of this almost circling the wagons mentality of everything's going crazy. I'm going to retreat to my community. I'm going to take care of my people, be that my family or my church community, whatever that is. Right. We're just going to circle the wagons and kind of hold on to each other and let the world burn down around us. And I would be lying if I didn't tell you that was kind of tempting to me, right?
That's a temptation we all face.
Right.
I mean, whenever we're overwhelmed with the problems we see around us, the difficulties in the world, the temptation is just to kind of run away from it and go back into my shell and wherever I'm comfortable. And I think that's a temptation we've got to overcome. We've got to look to see, how can I engage? How can I do the good that God is calling me to do?
Right. Yeah, I'm interested in this election in particular because it does seem like there's more, especially being in Georgia, right? And mm-hmm. we have a much wider reach than Georgia on this show, but from a radio perspective, right, the vast majority of our listeners are going to be in the Atlanta area, the Athens area, right?
Sure.
And it does feel this time, because Georgia is a swing state, that we have a lot more of a say in it. But it's interesting to hear you say, even if we didn't, even if you live in California, New York, somewhere that 100% is going to go one direction, or Texas is 100%, right?
That's right.
You still have an obligation to be involved.
It's an obligation and it's a right. Mm-hmm. And it's a right that comes with the obligation. So we can focus on the obligation side of it and say, yeah, it's your moral duty as a Catholic. But it's our opportunity to say that I do care, I do want to make a difference, and I want to show to myself and to the world that there are better options, or this is the best option among the possible.
And would you use that language? Would you say that it is a moral duty that you have as a Catholic to vote if you live in a democracy?
That's what the documents of the church say very clearly.
Okay.
But from the Catechism of the Catholic Church to the Compendium of Catholic Social Doctrine.
That's strong wording, isn't it?
Pope Benedict XVI, right. Pope Francis. I mean, it's constant teaching of the church that we do have a moral responsibility to vote. Now, there are obviously circumstances in which a person can't, you know, Hannah may have confided to me or not that she forgot to vote one time when she was overseas. Mm-hmm. There were times I didn't vote in the past because I didn't think about it. But as I've grown in an understanding of what the church teaches about this, I've said, no, I do need to vote.
So let me see if I can understand this or put this into words. If you make a conscious choice not to vote, and you're listening to this show, are you now in a state of mortal sin and need to go to confession?
Well, that is a tricky question. Remember, there are three conditions for mortal sin: grave matter, full knowledge, deliberate consent. If any one of those is missing, it's not a mortal sin. It could still be grave matter, but it may not be mortal sin, which separates us completely mm-hmm. from God. So in the fact that you're listening to this show, you're getting full knowledge.
We're making you culpable.
That's my point. You're culpable.
You can't, don't touch the dial because you can't do anything now. We've already said
it's too late. Right. Now you know.
So grave matter, potentially.
It could potentially be grave matter. I would say that probably it does not delve into the realm of grave matter, simply because grave matter is usually reserved for elements of human life, dignity. That was
not sure what that was.
Yeah. I don't know either. We had some noise in the background here. Pretty exciting. grave matters, things that have to do with human life or with the faith, like blaspheming God. That's grave matter. It's taking human life or violating the dignity of the human person, sexual acts that are outside of marriage, for example. Those are all things that are grave matter. Voting, it's important. But we could have a debate on whether that's grave matter or not. That's a realm for moral theologians to discuss.
Sure. Do you guys have any other questions that you specifically? I just want to make sure that we hear from you guys first before I start going through a list of USCCB and user submitted or listener submitted.
Yeah, I have a question. So with all the social media and all the ads and just everything, there's so much propaganda maybe, or how do I stay selectively ignorant, maybe that's a good way to say it, but just how do I minimize all that so I can be an informed voter? You know what I'm saying?
Well, I think it's very important to sift through and search for the truth. Propaganda and the political realm has existed from time immemorial. In fact, when they've done the excavations around Vesuvius in Pompeii, they found political slogans in graffiti on the walls from over 2,000 years ago. There's nothing new that takes place in the realm of politics, except for perhaps now there's a lot more AI-generated content and algorithms that are used to target us in social media to feed us more of what we're used to looking at. But I do think it's very important to exercise critical thinking and to examine the information that's coming to you. Because if we just go with sound bites or little clips here and there, oftentimes you don't get to the truth of the matter. I always enjoy watching political debates because it's interesting to see how the candidates go back and forth, and they use different tactics, and they're looking for the visual cues and all that. And for example, that I watched the end of the debate between Kamala Harris and Donald Trump recently, and Kamala Harris did a phenomenal job of like all the visual cues and said some really great things and sounded really good. And Donald Trump looked kind of old, grumpy, and his posture wasn't the best. And he kind of stumbled over his words, not as eloquent. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, when you look at the substance, there's some significant difference between the candidates. And that's why I say you've got to use your critical thinking to cut through the fluff and get to the heart of the matter. What really matters? And I think this is actually in the USCCB, and I don't want to dominate this conversation, but the USCCB put out an excellent document on forming consciences for faithful citizenship a number of years ago. And it's still very relevant for understanding how we are to approach politics. And it talks about this these elements here. It talks, I'll quote from the intro to the 2019 letter. It says, we strive to understand. Before seeking to be understood, to treat with respect with those with whom we disagree, to dismantle stereotypes, and to build productive conversation in place of vitriol. I think this is what we can bring as Catholics into an analysis of the political realm. It's like, let's like even-handed, let's look for dialogue, let's conversation, let's seek the truth, and let's get past the fluff and the surface level. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah, that more than answered my question. Yeah.
Great.
I was like, on that same vein, like I personally, I had that question. So I lived abroad, which is why I did not vote last time. When you're not in America, you don't get bombarded by text messages and pamphlets and ads or anything. So I honestly forgot 2019 to 2022 was when I was gone. So, so when I came back to the States, I was very like, I kind of do want to take on that responsibility, mm-hmm. but I don't like being told what to think. And I think a lot of younger people are feeling that, like, social media is very opinionated. We're all very opinionated, but it's just becoming overly saturated with memes and reels and stuff, just really trying to make you feel something.
Sure.
And I personally, like, both sides of the aisle, I really don't like it when people like take clips and then they like tell you what it's going to make you feel, and they tell you what they're going to say, and then they show you the clip, and then afterwards they go, didn't that make you feel like I said it would make you feel? I actually like the source. So right. I actually watched the entire debate. I'm very proud of myself. It's the first time I've ever watched any political debate except for the one between Trump and Biden. And then afterwards, then I watched commentary, and I was like, wow, I actually felt what they said that I would feel, but I felt it in the moment by myself.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I was like, I don't know if that's nice, but I felt very proud of myself for that. But one other thing is when I am watching like commentators, I personally try to, if a person can't say something positive at all about the candidate that they don't like, mm-hmm. I don't typically take that as very heavy. It's like if they view the other person as pure evil, or just every single thing that comes out of their mouth is a lie, I'm like, well, do you even know what like sorting like truth is? Because every mm-hmm. single person has like human dignity.
Right.
Neither side is evil. They both are imperfect human beings, and we all
Which
are.
Which seems to be how it's presented to us right now.
Yeah.
Right?
It's, yeah. If you're evil, you're evil if you vote for that person, and mm-hmm. both sides say that. So no matter what, you're evil is
right.
kind of what we're presented with today. But yeah, that's... I've been trying, and it's one of those you have to balance your regular life and then all this political stuff in the background as well.
So in that vein, what do you say to someone? I've been historically the last couple of elections, I have held my nose and voted for a Republican candidate who I thought was a pretty not a great human being.
Less than ideal.
Right. But on paper, from a policy perspective, I've said that seems to jive a whole heck of a lot more with my understanding of how a country ought to be run and I'm not going to say it's weird because you're parsing, because what you don't want to say is everything's great from this political party as Catholics, right? There's no Orthodox Catholic party that's going to mirror the positions that has any chance of getting steam, right?
Well, you're pointing out a very important aspect here. There's a great quote here from the USCC document. It says, it's in number 14. It says, as citizens, we should be guided more by our moral convictions than by our attachment to a political party or interest group.
Right.
When necessary, our participation should help transform the party to which we belong. We should not let the party transform us in such a way that we neglect or deny fundamental moral truths or approve intrinsically evil acts.
Right.
And that's the end of the quote, but this gets really at the heart of a Catholic's approach to politics. Don't just follow the party line, whatever party it is. We have to engage our critical thinking. And Hannah, you pointed out a great point. I mean, if we can't see the value, the good in another person and recognize the positive in another, our vision is tainted. We're getting into this black and white, us versus them mentality, which is antithetical to the gospel. You know, Christ came to bring about reconciliation. He came to bring about truth. And he was able to see, even in an adulterous woman, a woman who was looking for love, and he brought her back out of that situation. So obviously in the realm of politics, we're not going to convert many politicians, right? The point where they're like really dug in on their positions, but we can always be looking for the good in the other people. But then we have to make decisions according to what policies do I consider are going to be best for our country? Who is best going to lead us and to carry out what is going to bring us to the common good and gospel principles.
And we're going to take a break here in a minute, but when we come back, I really do want to get into the question of whether or not there is a sort of a hierarchy of moral issues.
Clearly.
And non-negotiables, mm-hmm. and all of that. But I did want to say one thing from what you were just mentioning made me think of this. I saw a clip recently of Joe Biden putting on the Trump hat. Did y'all see this? Yeah, in Ohio. And I loved it. I thought, man, this is, it reminded me so much of sort of the George Bush Al Gore days, or even the McCain Obama days, where there was a whole lot more of this, like, hey, listen, we disagree, I don't like you, but we're all in this together.
Right.
And it was a real palpable moment because of how shocked I was by that. And I'm not a huge fan of Joe Biden, but I thought that was a really humanizing thing that he just did. And then I thought, and I haven't seen anything like that in a very, very long mm-hmm. time. So that was super interesting. I do think that, like you were saying, Hannah, we dehumanize one another mm-hmm. in a way. And on the second half, I do want to come back and kind of meat and potatoes, brass tack stuff. I'm going to throw out the names of political parties and the names of some candidates. And I want to dig into some of this because I think it is worth doing. I don't want to just beat around the bush. I don't know. Do you disagree? You're the
producer. Oh, no, I definitely don't disagree. That'll be great. I can't wait to hear what you are thinking in that wonderful brain of yours up there.
Thanks, Julian.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right. So we are going to take a really quick break right now. And then we're going to jump right back in where we left off and dig into some of this. Guys, thanks so much for being here. Ladies and gentlemen at home, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. This is Honest to God, a production of AM 1160 The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio. And we will be right back.
More of Honest to God is coming up on AM 1160 The Quest.
Let's see, I have Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, and Paramount Plus, Spotify, and Apple Music.
Is that all?
Oh, and HBO Max.
There's nothing wrong with having streaming service subscriptions, but is it helping to bring you and others closer to Christ? Consider making the cost of one of those services to be your monthly donation to The Quest. We're totally listener-supported. We rely on donations from people like you.
And SiriusXM, too.
Please, prayerfully consider making a monthly donation to support AM 1160 The Quest.
And now back to Honest to God, What's on Your Mind? A show for young adults by young adults on AM 1160 The Quest.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. This is Honest to God, a production of The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio. We are here for our second half talking about all things voting. We've got Father Daniel here. We've got Michael here. We've got Hannah here. It's going to be a great day. I didn't screw it up once that time. That was the first take.
Everybody nailed listening. It. That's great.
So one thing I want to dive right into is what is it? I know there is. I know the answer is yes, but what is the hierarchy of moral issues that we as Catholics should keep in mind when we walk into a voting booth?
That's a great question. Well, I could counter that and say, wait, isn't everything important? Catholic, we have this seamless garment of everything's all important. Right. And, you know, we get, actually, no. The USCCB document on forming consciences for faithful citizenship, number 37, states very clearly, all issues do not carry the same moral weight. And the moral obligation to oppose policies promoting intrinsically evil acts has a special claim on our consciences and our actions. So this is pretty explicit, and this is reiterating constant teaching of the church. There's a 2002 document from the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith on the involvement of Catholics in political matters. It states essentially the same thing in number 4 of that document. It talks about there is a hierarchy of goods, and they're not all at the same level. At the introduction to the letter from 2019 for the USCCB document, it says the threat of abortion remains our preeminent priority. It uses those words, preeminent right. priority, because it, that is abortion, directly attacks life itself because it takes place within the sanctuary of the family and because of the number of lives destroyed.
Okay.
So that... those numbers and together with number 4 from the CDF document lay out some of those things that are intrinsically evil and that are at the top of the hierarchy. Like, we can't cross that line.
Sure. What are, okay? What are some of the other ones aside
abortion,
from
abortion? Euthanasia talks about respect and protect the rights of the human embryo, the safeguarding of the family and a proper understanding of what marriage is, protection of minors, modern forms of slavery. You know, we have a big problem here in Georgia, for example, of human trafficking.
Right. It's one of the big hubs for the country.
It is, unfortunately. Right. So these are all things that cry out to God, and they're intrinsically evil. Like, they're never good. We can never support those type of things.
So is, and don't let me put words in your mouth, just to clarify, yep. right? I have a number of family members who really disagree with me politically, sure. right? And something that I sort of get thrown in my face a lot is, oh, you're just a single issue voter. And I don't consider myself a single issue voter, but right. usually my comeback is, if you told me that I could be king of the United States tomorrow and run it however I wanted to, but 4,000 infants still had to be murdered every day, I would not take that deal.
That's right.
Right. And is that, is that in line with sort of the
definitely
understanding?
Yeah, without a doubt. There's certain lines that you just can't cross because of the intrinsic evil. This goes back to John Paul II clarified some of these elements in moral theology through his encyclical letter, Veritate Splendor, mm-hmm. which lays out the nature of intrinsically evil acts. Now, there's a big difference here, and St. John Paul II talks about this. The intrinsically evil acts are things that there's a line in the sand, you can't go beyond that. But then there's also the good things that we should be doing, but those are a different moral category.
Okay.
So, for example, as Catholics, we have a moral responsibility to care for the poor, to help the immigrants,
right?
To do all that we can to help unwed mothers. Mm-hmm. But these are positive injunctions, which are different from the negative injunctions of morally intrinsically evil acts, okay? So the negative, you can never go there. The positive, we should strive towards,
sure.
and we do them in as much as
That's
we can.
That's interesting. Okay, I've never had it explained to me
It's a very important distinction that it's just part of the heritage of Catholic moral teaching.
Okay. Michael, Hannah, do you guys have thoughts on that? You don't have to. I'm just, and the reason I'm asking, right, is because in light of the debate and in light of the situation where, at least from my perspective as a Catholic, I have one presidential nominee who I think is, once again, probably a pretty bad guy in his personal life in a lot of ways, right? And in this case is recently, as of this debate, saying kind of winking and nodding at sort of pro-abortion policies, right? Mm-hmm. Saying that he's going to support nationwide IDF funded by taxpayer dollars and things like that. And then on the other side, I have a presidential nominee who is saying we need to create a national protection, right?
Of promote abortion.
Right. And so is that the distinction? Is that why?
That's actually a different moral question. It goes into something that St. John Paul II talked about in Evangelium Vitae about the possibility of voting for a candidate when it's, you know, restricting a law which is already in place. Mm-hmm. Okay, there's political calculations that go on as well as far as, you know, what position candidates take. But going back to the bigger question, we have always two imperfect candidates for the president, or yes, sometimes more. There's more that will be on the ballot. But there are two candidates who are less than perfect. And yet there's one that's actively promoting something intrinsically evil and saying it's actually, and in her words, saying it's a good thing.
Right.
That it's a right for women. That's a position you just can't take from a moral mm-hmm. standpoint. It's reprehensible. And you have another candidate who's waffling on it a little bit, taking a political kind of cagey approach to seeing how many votes he can get. And in the past, he was pro-abortion, mm-hmm. But he has done things that have actually advanced the pro-life position. So two imperfect candidates,
right.
But one is clearly on the realm of advocating for intrinsically evil. The other just kind of weak and calculating.
So, Producer Julian, you know where I'm going to go with this, I think.
Oh, I do.
Let's say there's a third party, like, I don't know, the American Solidarity Party.
Oh, yes.
You want to dig into that a little
bit? I'm familiar with the American Solidarity Party. They will discuss the fact that they align directly with Catholic social teaching. They're not Catholic social teaching party because they have members of all very diverse members that people that did not like the Republican Party and definitely did not like the Democrat Party and vice versa. Their policies include taking care of the poor and the needy, being a support system for mothers, especially single mothers. And they are pro-life from cradle, or actually, let me rephrase, from conception to natural death. And I actually, I'm not sure their position on IVF. I'm certain that it's probably aligned with the Catholic Church.
And they have zero chance of actually winning ever.
Well, no, that's actually not entirely true, because they have won local elections, which actually relates right back to what Father was saying, that it's really about your local community. And I'm not saying that the American Solidarity Party doesn't have a chance. And in fact, they're in quite a few states. I've got some stats on them right now. They're on the ballot in Florida.
Okay, but they're not going to win. You know they're not going
to
win.
I can't speak to the fact that they will or will not win this year. Realistically, they're not going to win this year, but you never know.
Okay.
But what is important with the third party is that we talked about your vote counts. So you write in the name, which this year's name is Peter Sonsky. That is the nominee. So you write in Peter Sonsky, and I think the last election there was 750 votes in the state of Georgia. That gets noticed. Mm-hmm. And in other states, they're actually on the ballot. So people are seeing this American Solidarity Party. And the more and more and more that we keep punching in and saying, hey, like, we want more parties. We're done with this left and right, red and blue. We want more choices so that we can actually vote for what we believe in. And I think that that's really what American Solidarity Party can be for a lot of people. So if you need to hear it again and pulled over, it is Peter Sonsky, S-O-N-S-K-I. Write it in and you can vote with a good conscience.
I would love to hear one of y'all's thoughts on that. Right. You've got a third party who has a 0% chance of winning. I'm sorry, Julian, but realistically, right? Maybe somewhere down the line, right? But right now, but is going to align directly with the church's teaching and that sort of moral hierarchy that we talked about. Do you vote for them over the guy who's got a 50% chance of winning and just aligns a good bit, but not entirely?
I think that kind of is, it's like you're skirting around your own conscience, like to get around trying to choose between the, we always call it the lesser of two evils, right?
Right.
Of the two candidates. Personally, I don't think that is the route to go.
What, you don't think what is the route
to go? To vote for a third party, like independent party, for instance,
right,
which historically has never won.
Right.
It's for me, it's if in the future the candidate that I don't want to win wins and I know that I voted for somebody who isn't even really mentioned in the polls,
mm-hmm,
but maybe they won by a razor margin. And I'm like, well, my vote could have been the difference to get this other person in there. Personally, I don't know how that would sit on my conscience.
What about you, Michael? What do you think?
Well, I do like the idea of having another party, you know, and you could get more of what, you know, like actually vote for more of what you want to happen, you know? So like a third party, that'd be awesome if we could integrate that more in the political system. I don't know how that would happen, but I do feel like voting for a third party is like indecision, because like Hannah was saying, it's not like you're necessarily gonna, like, they're gonna win. So it's kind of like, I don't know, wasting a vote. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
No, that's just like, I don't have the answer. I'm just curious. Father?
I'm fascinated to hear the response from Hannah and Michael in this, because that's more or less where my own thought process has gone in this. I've lived in other countries, you know, in Italy and Canada. I've visited a lot of other countries, and they have multiple parties, and it's a much more volatile political landscape. The United States is basically a two-party system for most of its history. Those parties have shifted a little bit. Their positions have shifted over the years, but it's essentially been a two-party system. Within the cultural context of the United States, the political structure, we're probably not going to shift that anytime in the near future. But each person has to vote their conscience. And if a person in conscience feels like they need to vote for a third party candidate who aligns more fully with Catholic teaching, great. If you feel that you need to vote for the candidate who has more realistic possibility of winning and maybe tipping the scales, that's where my conscience would lead me to vote. Because I don't want to waste my vote or feel like I'm engaged in a futile effort. Now, that won't change the fact that as a priest, I will be preaching and helping to form people's consciences so that they understand the issues and they understand the gravity of these issues. And in that line, there's this number that I came across in the USCCB document, which is really, really, really strong. Number 34. It says a Catholic cannot vote for a candidate who favors a policy promoting an intrinsically evil act, such as abortion, euthanasia, assisted suicide, deliberately subjecting workers or the poor to subhuman living conditions, redefining marriage in ways that violate its essential meaning, or racist behavior, if the voter's intent is to support that position. In such cases, a Catholic would be guilty of formal cooperation in grave evil.
That's strong.
This statement. Is really, really strong language. And then it continues on in number 38. I mean, this is coming from our bishops. It says it is important to be clear that the political choices faced by citizens not only have an impact on general peace and prosperity, but also may affect the individual's salvation. Like, I mean, in cloaked language, they're saying you can go to hell.
Right. Right.
You know, if you're not voting with a well-formed conscience and if you're voting for someone who is doing intrinsically evil things or supporting intrinsically evil policies.
Now, to clarify, though, is that because what it sounded to me like it was saying is if I'm voting for them because I'm supporting those policies, right? Is Correct. It morally sinful for me to vote for someone who supports some of those non-negotiables if I'm not voting for if I'm voting for them in spite of that?
Yes, that is okay.
Okay.
Because there's the difference between formal cooperation in evil and material cooperation in evil. It's a distinction that's always made in Catholic moral theology. So if I share the intention of the person, like let's say a candidate is for assisted suicide, and I vote for that candidate because I want assisted suicide, well, then I am sharing formally in the cooperation in evil. If a candidate stands for assisted suicide, and I don't really like that point, but he's got a lot of other really good points, and there's not another good option. And I vote for them in spite of that fact, then it's material cooperation. It's remote enough that it's morally illicit. That's Catholic moral teaching.
It's interesting. I want to get to some user submitted or some listener submitted questions that we have. Some of these are kind of funny, and we're not going to get into those, like, where is Joe Biden? Here's one that I like a lot. As a Catholic, and this is to anybody, as a Catholic, should I only vote for Trump because his position on abortion is slightly, quote, better, end quote, than Harris? What are y'all's thoughts? Should I only vote for him because he's slightly better?
I would say I would go with the candidate who has done what they say that they will do.
Okay. What does that mean?
Like, so like, for instance, at the DNC, which, you know, supports the Democrats, the Democratic National Convention, they literally had a abortion ban outside.
Yeah. Free, and they were abortions and vasectomies.
Free, right? So paid for by the Democratic National Convention. And then it was like they celebrated every time that they heard another one happened.
There was like a ding.
There was like a ding, or something like that. So
yeah, it was really demonic.
Which to me, that's not just like, oh, this is something bad that's happening over there somewhere. This is something they're actively celebrating.
It's child sacrifice to Moloch. Yeah, literally. So yeah.
Take that as you will. Yeah.
Right. You got any thoughts on that one?
Well, I didn't know. That's shocking. I didn't realize that. But no, I think Hannah covered it.
So here's a good one too. How do I stay friends with people who disagree with me in this election over significant issues?
That's a great question. I think that goes to the heart of our Catholic approach to politics, that it's not about dividing and demonizing, but let's find common ground. Let's try to understand what is the good that a person is seeking and why do they hold that position? So learning to engage in dialogue, that's hard.
Right.
And it's an art that's being lost in our society. And I think the only way that we can actually recover a healthy political process is when we learn to get back to those, like the bragging years or whenever, when politicians would actually joke around or work together, compromise for the common good without sacrificing intrinsically important moral principles, of course. So I think that we all have to work at that dialogue of trying to understand the other.
I find a lot of times, and I don't know if this is true for y'all, but in my own family, there are just topics, and it's a tragedy to me, that are off the table. You can't say it. You can't bring it up. You're sitting around a table with the people you love the most in life, and you can't talk about really important things, right? Sometimes political, but often moral issues, right, that bleed over into politics in a big way. And it really is a tragedy. It really is. It's a very tough thing. I talk to young people about this a lot, and I talk about what a brave act it is of trying to fight your way through that awkwardness to have a real conversation about something that you care about with somebody that you love who disagrees with you. I don't know. How do you do that? I mean, I want like real brass tacks, tips and tricks if anybody has them, because I need to hear them. I don't know how to do it.
It reminds me of like COVID times. The word COVID is still very divisive. Like, how did you respond to it? Mm-hmm. Did you get the vaccine? Did you wear a mask? Did you do, like, all that stuff? Which divided my family, divided my households that I lived in. And I think it's when people do that thing where they're like, well, if you wear a mask, you are evil. If you got vaccinated, you are like, or whatever. And it's like, no. Like, I don't mind saying I got vaccinated because my mom is a doctor and she really wanted me to. And I lived abroad. And in order to come back to the States, I had to get vaccinated. So
and I don't think you're evil.
Right. And so like, for me, I'm like, if I meet somebody who then is like, because of this one issue, I now don't like you, that says a lot.
Right.
And I'm like, where is this hurt coming from? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like trying to meet them on a different level. And if that gets them riled up, it's like, okay, well, like maybe we can get to a friendship or whatever where we can talk about that one day. Yeah, but
I feel like in a lot of ways, and you guys can disagree with me if you want, but politics has taken the place of religion for so many people.
Oh, yeah.
People who want to live and die for a thing, but have abandoned the thing that they were actually meant to live and die for, right? Which is Christ and his church, right? But we are inherently religious. Mm-hmm. And so we're clinging on to these things and these ideologies and making up these new sacraments and all of this for the sake of political tribalism. And it's really gross. I'm guilty of it too. I'm totally guilty of that sometimes. I see myself occasionally being like, ooh, I'm kind of making an idol of this, and that's not okay. I don't think I have a good way to combat that. I don't know how we sort of like turn that dial down and take it a step back realistically as a society.
I think there's two things that can help. At the beginning of the 2002 document from the Vatican on engagement of Catholics in political life, they cite the example of St. Thomas More. And St. Thomas More, he was put in a very difficult position as Lord Chancellor of the Kingdom of England under Henry VIII. Henry VIII wanted him to do something that was intrinsically evil and sanction his adultery and remarriage to Anne Boleyn, and he wouldn't do it. And the king tried in lots of different ways to force him to do it, and he just wouldn't do it. But he never came out in a way that was assaulting the king or belittling him or saying, you know, you're a, you know, a good for nothing because you're, you know, getting rid of your legitimate wife. His approach was humility. Humility and sticking to the truth. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a very tricky balance there. Humility on the part, like, I don't have all the answers. my intellect hasn't figured out everything. I don't have a solution to the healthcare problems of the United States or the immigration issue. I don't have all the answers, and to recognize that. And that's where we need to engage in a dialogue where we can find the best solutions to problems. So the humility on one side, but also that adherence to the truth and not to back down. Because the other temptation that we can face in these thorny political discussions is to say, well, to keep the peace, I won't say anything.
Right.
Or I will kind of bend over backwards, or I'm in a public setting and people are, you know, putting something forth that's just not true, and I'm just afraid to speak up. So the humility has to go together with that readiness to die for the truth, like St. Right. Thomas More. That is a tall order. And that's why we need holiness even in the
supernatural fortitude.
Totally.
And for the record, everybody check out A Man for All Seasons. It won Best Picture 1960 something, because back then you could win Best Picture with a movie about a saint, right? And it still holds up 100%.
One of the best movies of all time.
Yes. Yeah. You get your wife or your girlfriend or whatever, have a movie night, watch Man for All Seasons.
The dialogue is phenomenal.
It's so great. I really like the portrayal of Henry VIII, who always gets portrayed as the fat, pudgy guy in the paintings. Mm-hmm. But when he was young, he was this athletic, vibrant. All right, sorry. I'm not going to nerd out with Father on history again. This is an interesting one. Is not the church's stance that abortion must be illegal a bit of an exception? Does not the church generally hold that government should restrict its legislation of morality significantly? So I think they're saying, why should we want our government to legislate morality?
Well, why not? You know, you want a moral government. Because from my understanding, the government is meant to serve the people and for the people to live good lives and, you know, be at peace and like in unity with like our religion too. You have to have a government that aligns with those values, I would say, you know, somewhat, even though we don't always align, but it's definitely something to work towards, I would say.
I think you're onto something there, Michael, but I would couch it in a little bit different approach, in the sense that every law has an inherent value set and worldview within it. So every law is backing up a moral choice, whether that's a bad moral choice or a good moral choice. So the very fact that laws exist and there's a political structure means that there is a worldview that's there. The 2002 document from the Holy See makes very clear that the Catholic Church is not trying to impose its values from a confessional standpoint on the political world or on civil structures, but it's saying we have a right as Catholics to engage in the dialogue about what is best and what is for the common good. And it's a responsibility upon us as Catholics to engage in that process, to say, no, from what I know from my faith and from my life experience, from what I've seen, this is the best way to address healthcare or immigration or abortion or whatever the issue is. And I think that's our responsibility. So it's not a question of imposing, like in Sharia law, you know, Muslims, they unite faith and government all in the same thing. No. A Catholic worldview recognizes distinct realms of the political realm. And so Jesus said, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, give God what is God.
Right.
And so that's what we do as Catholics. We recognize there's a legitimate autonomy, but we have to engage in that process and not be afraid to share our values.
Well, shouldn't political laws reflect the natural law, though?
Definitely.
Okay.
And that's what the document of the church gets to, that there is an underlying moral law which transcends religious affiliation.
Okay. All right. I understand now.
Yeah.
I was just having a conversation with a bunch of my kids at school about how legality and morality, stop pretending like they're the same thing.
That's right.
You'll have these discussions on sin and they'll say, yeah, but wouldn't you get arrested for that? I was like, but legality and morality, they're separate things.
The same thing.
I'm not saying you're going to stay out of trouble legally. I'm telling you, this is the right thing to do in that situation.
That's right.
Wow, this is pretty fantastic. We got about, what, a minute and a half left? Julian, do you have any last minute thoughts before we kick off?
This has been an incredibly powerful episode. If I had any thoughts, I would love to hear some comments down below about what your thoughts are on voting. Do you agree? Do you disagree? Do you think that we should vote third party? Do you think, no, stick with the two-party system, stick with voting for who can win until we can get to a point where we can actually bring abortion and all those things to eradicate it fully. Put it in the comments down below, or if you're driving, pull over and then comment on the YouTube for us, and that will help the show and help to bring other people closer to God and on the path to heaven.
Michael, you got any last minute thoughts on whether or not you're going to register and vote? I don't know.
Yeah, I'm going to register right after this.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'll do it.
No way. I wish we had enough time. We could have them register live on the show. That would be fun. I believe once again, the deadline for registration is October 7th. And we can put a link to how you could register in the show notes. Yeah. Cool beans, guys. Any last minute thoughts before we go?
Well, Michael, it sparked my conscience, too. I just moved 2 weeks ago and realized I need to re-register to vote in New County. So I make sure I get on the right, get the right ballot.
Awesome. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, please pray, discern, and go vote in this election, guys. We'll see you at the ballot, honest to God, live from the polling places in November. Right, Producer Julian?
I don't know about that.
Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening, guys. Thank you so much for being here. This has been Honest to God, a production of The Quest, Atlanta's Catholic Radio. Producer Julian,
signing off.
Over and out.
This has been Honest to God, What's on Your Mind? A show for young adults by young adults on AM 1160, The Quest.